Buzz.com. We started to realize it, and we went ahead and did a campaign to reassure members their miles are safe. And we started to communicate with them aggressively to tell we are a separate company. But then anxiety was there, and we were there to address it. 17th of April, when JET shut down, we wrote a mail. And when we really meant it, to say it is a continuum and it is a commitment. We will be there to honor all our commitment and to maintain the trust which millions of members have with the brand.
Manish Dureja is a senior business leader with over 24 years' experience straddling the loyalty and marketing domains. He's sharp, incisive, and most importantly, a passionate believer in what he does. He spent most of his career associated with airlines and loyalty, and is currently serving as a managing director and CEO of Intermiles, which most of you might know as Jet Privilege in its earlier avatar. He's also held senior leadership assignments in Jet Airways and Directions, a direct marketing agency. He and his team have just spearheaded a great rebranding of Jet Privilege to Intermiles, and is also about to possibly interestingly pivot it into something else, on which we will talk about it much later. This is Upendra Anburi welcoming you all to Pathbreakers. And Manish, welcome to Pathbreakers, and thanks for taking the time out from your hectic schedule.
Thanks, Upendra, for having me here.
Great. So, Manish, as we were just chatting, now, one of the reasons for inviting you is you've been at the forefront of loyalty, coalition loyalty, and there are very few brands who are worth their salt who can talk of having a 10 million plus affluent, semi-affluent customer base in India. So, what's it like for you heading a very premium and prestigious program like this?
Upendra, let me say that the loyalty that our extensive members have displayed towards the program over the years was anchored around the airline Jet, something we are truly proud of. But when we carved ourselves out as a separate business, we started a journey when we were taken as a separate entity. We actually created an accelerated growth path for becoming a travel and lifestyle rewards program. And that has been in the work for many years, actually. If you remember, we launched the hotels platform in 2015. Then we launched the shopping platform in 2016. This was backed by our thought process that we need to move towards creating aggregator of cross categories rather. And in that context, actually, what we have done, we have steadily built the program and the platform. And now Intermiles is airline agnostic, everyday travel lifestyle program. What we didn't have was the commerce capability in our platform. And therefore, the positioning which we have taken and evolution which has happened from a program to a data-centric customer engagement platform is to build the commerce capability, go deep and drive consumer behavior and influence the behavior through the currency. Intermiles encompasses both award-winning the loyalty and rewards program, and it's a ubiquitous reward and recognition currency. When I say recognition, there are two aspects to a loyalty program, the reward and the recognition. The program offers its growing base of 10 million plus members the opportunity to earn and redeem Intermiles, the new age currency of engagement across travel, hospitality, lifestyle, and across 10 plus category, and we have almost 150 plus program partners. What therefore began as a frequent flyer today has become a platform of choice that enables our members across their travel and lifestyle aspiration.
So just to simplify this, what is a consumer proposition for Intermiles? And similar to that, what is a brand proposition for being on Intermiles, and how does this work?
So the consumer proposition is very simple. No matter how small or big your journey is in life, everything what you do with us gets rewarded. The purpose of our program and the company per se is fulfill aspiration with memorable rewarding experiences. And therefore, the brand is actually living that, creating Intermiles as a digital currency of engagement and a currency of choice as well. So in an everyday lifestyle and reward program, there are many such opportunities which exist. How do we actually customize the experience through personalization, drive value, and bring convenience to every member? The program today has unique benefits which accelerates your currency earning across multiple categories. And therefore, for unlike any other program where your currencies are spread or your engagement is spread across multiple brands and you lose track of it, here it's a consolidation in one account, and therefore you are able to add value and recognize that value. At the end of the day, customers are collecting this currency for getting something out of it. And in a single account across multiple partner ecosystem, you're able to collect that currency. Intermiles aims to deliver more value, which typically cashback cannot offer, which is more transactional in providing. and Intermiles is more ubiquitous, motivational, and therefore a digital currency. And that's where our positioning has been, that it is for those customers who seek experience, and Intermiles is the digital currency of engagement.
Okay. And it's interesting you should say that this is potentially or possibly more powerful than cashbacks. Why do you say that?
Because cashback, somebody needs to fund it, and cashback at best generate a transaction. Intermiles drives engagement and a long-term engagement, because at the end of the day, there is a value which the customer subscribes to it. Today, cashbacks are being funded by some VC or someone who is actually writing it, but this cannot continue any longer. And you need cashback to drive a transaction, but you cannot buy loyalty by giving cashback. And therefore, you need to create a self-sustaining ecosystem of partners and a universal currency, which we believe Intermiles is best positioned to actually deliver that.
Okay, interesting. So if you were to step back to how Intermiles or Jet Privilege started off, you had Jet Airways as a primary sponsor of the program. It was created on a backbone of allowing you to earn miles and burn them and use them for buying jet, right? And of course, you've built the program across multiple categories and verticals. But you've also gone through a very interesting and challenging phase fairly recently with Jet Airways leaving the market. So tell me, as a leader, you of course had created Jet Privilege, then you grew the program vastly beyond Jet Airways, and now fairly recently you had an unfortunate scenario where your primary sponsor had to pull out. And this is not very specific or particular to your space. It happens in every business where they are reliant on a very primary customer. So a couple of questions in this. A, how do you manage or navigate a scenario where one of your primary customers or sponsor kind of moves out or moves on? And B, any tips for the guys out there who are running businesses and leading enterprises? From your learnings, what should they be prepared for, and how can they manage a situation like this?
Thanks, Upendra. I think you raised a very important question, and I'll share some of my key learning and observation. So when we carved the program out, we were running it as an independent entity with both Etihad and Jet as two shareholders. Etihad, of course, had a majority. We adopted a strong corporate governance framework for running this as a separate independent business. Loyalty program is more of a liability management business than just the customer engagement. The front of it, what you see, is the customer engagement, but the back end is a lot about liability management and how you manage the liability and make sure you fund those liabilities as well. At the end of the day, program is built on trust, and trust is a significant factor in any program which is running, or a program like Jet Privilege or Airline, because what I'm offering is a promise for you to come and redeem. So as we grew independently, one aspect which was equally important is business continuity planning. And very often I have come across scenarios talking to different people. Business continuity planning is often neglected. At best, it is created for system disaster recovery, but not from a business perspective. And therefore, some organizations have a process where they create a risk register. And we also had that. We had an annual risk register. We used to update it. But then the question came, okay, what are we going to do? It's not a register which gets updated and somebody comes and signs and present in one of the audit committee or report. But that business has to take action and prepare if there are certain risks which are going to be there. And therefore, what we started off in 2017, we focused on refining our alternate growth strategy. And the approach was that every 6 months, we will revisit this alternate growth strategy and refine it as we grow, as the risk grew. Which essentially meant that when we saw the situation with Jet, we started building certain capability. And we fine-tuned the risk matrix by identifying capability, business model, and talent which was required to ensure we do the alternate growth. Ultimately, we approached it from a growth perspective, but applied it on certain capability metrics to de-risk the business. And that's how on 23rd of March 2019, we had an alternate redemption platform ready. 1st of June 2019, we have an alternate platform where members can earn miles. And we worked on creating an hotel platform on our own to go deep in the commerce. So some of this was largely around creating the BCP plan and ensuring that you have the capability and the technology which is required to carry on the business. So not a single day members were not able to redeem.
And tell me, as a leader, what you have done is basically saying, I have a running business model. I am seeing a fundamental black swan event, a risk happening to it. So I am creating a parallel railroad or a track on which I am preparing for that scenario. Any leader has an X amount of resources and a Y amount of time. How do you start investing time towards a situation or a risk which may or may not happen? How do you do that as a leader?
So, very simple. You make the risk threat credible and go to your board and say, if this happens, as the director of the company and as the MD of the company, we all have a fiduciary responsibility towards the business and towards the shareholder. What are we going to do? What actions have we taken if we knew this risk? Because the risk is known. The risk registers, every company, every large organization maintains a risk register, which somebody, some independent auditor will look at it and present it. But what actions have been taken? If it is presented to the board of directors, what actions have we taken? So I just brought that point up to say, this is the risk which is there. What are we going to do? And got the mandate from the board to say, okay, yes, we need to prepare ourselves and create an alternate growth strategy. And if this, God forbid, if something were to happen, this could be a plan B on which everything would run.
And on the consumer side of it, because there are two aspects to it. One is you had the name Jet Privilege, and then you had a currency called miles. Now you have Intermiles, and then you have a currency which is again has a different avatar to it. Some snippets of the journey and how you evolve the proposition, and I'm sure there are some consumers who are cool with it, some consumers who may say, hang on, what's really happening on this? So some snippets in terms of your journey and some learnings.
Yeah, so I think one of the learning in this entire process of creating the name and let me start with the business continuity plan was we never thought about the brand. Mm-hmm. And honestly, as a marketer, this is the biggest learning, that what consumers will think about it if Jet is not going to be there. Mm-hmm. Because the name is so intrinsic, the equity is derived out of the parent, and the reason for engagement for members was the currency, the account balance that we always at a given point of time managing 30 billion plus miles. And therefore, if you were to move this into a scenario where you could actually earn JP miles through Jet Privilege website for a travel on a particular airline, which is not Jet, the perception was just not there because the 25 years of the image and the brand was so ingrained. We underestimated that aspect. So from a BCP planning perspective, I think somewhere we need to also keep in mind that if you are changing something, if something were to happen, what is the impact going to be on a brand perspective from a customer? We started to realize it and we went ahead and did a campaign to reassure members their miles are safe. And we started to communicate with them aggressively to tell we are a separate company. But then anxiety was there and we were there to address it. 17th of April when Jet shut down, we wrote a mail. And when we really meant it to say it is a continuum and it is a commitment. We will be there to honor all our commitment and to maintain the trust which millions of members have with the brand. Having said that, the insights and the research gave us some real eye-opener and anecdotal where members have redeemed their miles and traveling on AirAsia and calling AirAsia and say, hey, is this ticket genuine? And rightfully so. And we can't wash away that. So that led to a point to say, okay, I think the point is the reason for engagement is the currency. And therefore, we need to reorient ourselves and create a new brand because the customer value proposition has changed. Today, members are able to use their miles across and earn it across airline. And therefore, the name Jet Privilege may not be the right approach. But miles is the currency which is there. And therefore, we stuck to with the research which we found was miles is a universal name and miles is the currency. For frequent flyer programs, miles has become a ubiquitous currency. And from that perspective, we wanted to retain the name miles in our brand. We did a research and a hackathon where we actually come up with about 1,600 odd different names.
Wow.
1,642 to be precise. Interbrand helped us navigate it. We went out talking to a lot of members, prospective partners, prospective customers, and existing partners to get their feedback of the various options which were there, what they see. From 1,642, we narrowed down to almost 32, from 32 to some six names which we tested out and then created the brand architecture around it. And finally, on November 14th, we launched it.
Awesome. You had a lot of excitement.
Oh yeah, it was full of excitement and amazing learning, amazing experience. And the team was all rallied behind because we were working towards, okay, we need to do it in November.
So Manish, in the next section, what I want to try and do is, loyalty is a very interesting subject. Different people have a different connotation on loyalty. So I'm going to step back. Fundamentally, there are two kinds of loyalty programs in a very simple nutshell. One is you have a standalone loyalty program, so I can go to a brand and I can have a loyalty relationship with a singular brand. The other is somewhat like what you do on a coalition framework, where essentially multiple brands come together on a single currency and allow a consumer to participate on a greater ecosystem. So my question to you is, as a brand, when I'm going down this journey of saying, hey, I want to create loyalty, what are those factors I need to figure out, or what are my decision criteria to say, hey, should I do something standalone or should I partner in a larger ecosystem? Or, hey, maybe I can do both. So what should a brand be looking at?
So I think my learning has been so far that one needs to be clear as to why you need a program. Quite often we have come across a situation where partners need customer acquisition and therefore they want to create a program. Loyalty program fundamental starts from customer retention. It comes from a reward perspective for you to keep the customer engaged. And therefore, brand need to be very clear as to what is the primary objective. Because every product and every brand have a different life cycle. Some are in the initial stage, growth stage. You start to mature and you start to see the attrition. So the question is, in the life cycle, you will see this different phases. And for a brand which is trying to set up something on its own, the purpose of the program needs to be very clear. And let me contextualize it from an Intermiles perspective. Intermiles offers today the growing base of almost 10 million plus members, the opportunity to earn and redeem Intermiles, the new age currency of engagement, across travel, hospitality, lifestyle, fuel, and it allows you to burn it across multiple services. So you can redeem your Intermiles on flights, on any flight, across any hotel, across Indian Oil fuel pumps, across reward store, and very recently, just this month, we started with dining as well, in a partnership with Dineout across 20,000 restaurants where you can earn and redeem. So the purpose of the currency is to create a solve for attainability and also the fungibility of it. Now, for any one customer or for any one partner to create its own program, they need to find a way to solve for these two. Apply a matrix to understand the attainability and fungibility. I understand a lot of people don't do fungibility, and that's where the problem starts, which essentially means that you will end up creating a breakage-based model for running a loyalty program. And therefore, somebody who's small, somebody who's trying to grow and use rewards as a mechanism to even engage and drive loyalty and acquire customer from this 10 million, they can partner with Intermiles. But somebody who wants to run their own loyalty program, they have to be very clear as to why they want to do it, and they have to solve for this fungibility as well as attainability.
Great. So Manish, this brings me to the next dimension of it, right? So let's say I am a apparel brand retailer. I have a few 100,000 customers. Why do I want to do loyalty? A few things. One is, yes, you said there are many brands who say they want to use this as a method to acquire customers. Second is, I want to gain insights into these consumers so that I can hopefully sell more and retain them over a longer time frame. So brands have the following arsenal, right? One is, of course, their basic product proposition, price, and so on. Second is, and we touched upon this a few minutes back, many brands are getting to a very tactical discounting/cashback mode. There are a few who go down the entire journey of a reward program, be it standalone or a coalition. So that being said, if I am this apparel retail brand, right? If I were to look 5 years hence, how do you think this entire loyalty spectrum is going to evolve? Now you're also hearing these things called gamification, social rewards, environment impact aspects, and so on. So my question to you in specific is, A, how do you see this loyalty space evolving or changing in the coming years? And for a brand setting out to do something in this space, what would be great for them to be looking out for?
Sure. So I think you raised a very important aspect around how we look at loyalty. See, in a dynamic changing business environment, every generation comes with their own set of individual characteristics and unique behavioral traits are there, presenting a brand new challenge as well as interesting opportunities for marketers like us to connect. I mean, you have millennials, you have Generation Z of the future. I remember talking to Ankur Variku and he spoke about the TMTA model. Let me explain that. The TMTA model is about time, money, trust and age. We tried utilizing that particular model on our ecosystem. And we found that it works pretty well because there will be cohorts of customers which will come across. So if I have to take back and say, trust is given in a loyalty program for Intermiles, where trust is paramount. We have held that trust. We have maintained that trust. A commitment to honor their miles. Now comes a question about time and money. Generally, looking at the India scenario, you will find that India as a country and large population is time rich, money poor. But that's very generalization of the way we look at it. But there will be certain scenarios which will emerge where customers are short of time, but they have money, not necessarily great amount of money, but they have decent amount of money. And therefore, the equation changes with age. That's the classical model we know. But it's not necessary that model will apply on the millennials and Generation Z. It is more of an individual preference. And therefore, the cohorts will come across people who start to value time and trade off with money. Whether you want to spend your time looking for a deal, looking for a cashback, and how much time you're willing to spend on that versus whether you see, okay, I'm giving you my data, give me the best, but give me value for my data. And therefore, you have a trust with a particular brand and you are time conscious and you are ready to trade off on that particular thing, that you're not looking for a 500, 1000 rupee discount. You're saying, okay, give me 200, 300, 400 miles because I will do this quite often because time is precious for me. So I think these are the traits which we see emerging, and we believe Intermiles is very rightly positioned towards that particular segment of customers where they value their time, because we know them, we value their time, and we deliver value to them by saving their time.
Since you mentioned segments, now, if you were to look at India, right, you have the classical urban rural, then you have, when you're looking at an age segmentation, you have the guys in the teens, new to workforce, guys in family stage, and so on. If you were to look at the slightly younger generation, which is possibly potentially either in college or new to the workforce, how do you think their mindset or aspirations of a loyalty program, are they different from those in their 30s, 40s and 50s? And any insights in terms of what makes it tick with these guys?
I think, as I said earlier, if we analyze it on the TMTA model, just an anecdotal point, you have TikTok, which is the largest user base in India. Now, so much of time available. I think where we are moving towards, the conflict is going to be between time as a currency and digital as a currency. Over a period of time, when people start to work and they start to realize there is a pocket of customers who start to put an economic value on their data and time. And they want that value back in some way or the other, not just free entertainment or looking at it from the other aspect. And therefore, we will appeal to only certain set of customers, not to a large set of customers. Our proposition is going to be to the top 5% or 10% of the customers. Now, these not necessarily will be in that age bracket which you mentioned. They could be millennials, they could be Gen Z, they could be people who are 30, 40 plus. And therefore, it is about the value which you derive, not necessarily the age bracket. But yes, there are people who will still value cashback, and cashbacks are going to be here. But the point is, our proposition to those brands is cashback costs you, let's say, X, 10%. Intermiles or any digital currency will cost you Y, which is obviously lower than 10% or whatever that number is. And therefore, at some point of time, brands have to take that call to how do they bring efficiency in their marketing efforts and what do they want to achieve out of it. Sooner or later, data will define this landscape. And brands who have data, who use this data to create value for their customers, will win.
Is there a metro India and a non-metro India, or should we as marketeers cross that bridge and say there is nothing called a metro India and a non-metro India?
I tend to agree with that particular thought. There is no metro or non-metro area purely because of the digital evolution which is happening in the country. Having said that, we have our user base has always been in the metros. But non-metros, we are seeing some encouraging result. In fact, just today, we are starting our advertising campaign and we have put the media planning lens to ensure that we reach out to beyond metros as well. And the app is also going live today. So we'll get some data around it. But so far, whatever we are seeing some encouraging results from the tier 2 cities as well.
Excellent. I want to move to the next one, which is a subject I think which is impacting many businesses and consumers are taking greater interest, is on the dimension of data privacy. So for organizations operating in spaces where they have to deal with a lot of data, you have GDPR, even India is evolving many regulations on that. So the question is, for businesses who are managing a lot of data, and you of course manage a ton of it, what's happening out there and how do you as an organization start evolving it?
Sure. So given how rapidly the landscape is evolving as well as growing in competition, there is data domination happening and there's a race for acquiring a lot of data at any cost. I think every brand's challenge is how to seize, save and optimize customers' time while ensuring that they create value at each touch point, which of course means that there is some data being generated. If through the data analytics one can predict the next steps, the customers will appreciate that added personalization because you have saved time or brought some value in terms of your offering to the customer. As a brand, we will have saved their time and given them a rewarding and memorable experience. And to run the data model to make the process efficient, it requires technology, which is available today. I mean, we have invested in a lot of that data and a lot of that technology using some of the ML algorithms. Also, with cloud technology, you are able to make it real time as well. But then data privacy, as you brought up, I think is going to be significant importance. And let me give you where we stand and what we have done around it. As organizations and individuals, we must learn to respect and protect privacy of our customers, of ourselves and of our customers. It is important to develop data stewards to lead the practice. And this thought is fairly new. To build a digital trust with your customer, you need to have data stewards. One such approach which we adopted was privacy by design. Okay. Now, the principle basically comes is that anything which we develop, the data privacy officer has to look at it and sign off, which right from start. And therefore, when you're starting a particular project or a product development, the privacy angles have been looked at and one looks at the entire schema and the data to figure out what needs to be saved in hash form, what needs to be saved in, what unique identifiers can be exchanged across so that privacy is not compromised. I don't think we are still yet there in full way, but what principles we adopted was understand your data, and it's important to understand the dimensions of the data. Focus on the customer journey, which are the touch points where the data is getting generated. Determine ownership of data protection in your organization. I think this is critical. There is a need to have a data protection officer, somebody who looks at the data and data subjects. Ensure a legal basis of processing the data. There is significant amount of contractual obligation one has to go through. We were compliant to GDPR when GDPR went live in May last year. And therefore, from our perspective, we have followed certain principles and made our systems capable of it. Empower cross-functional teams to understand what it means for data so that they understand and appreciate the privacy angle and not stretch some of the ideas beyond a point. Prepare for breach management. This happens, and what are you going to do when the breach happens? How are you going to respond to the customer? And in a GDPR world, there is a legal obligation to report such breaches as well. And communicate essential information. Be transparent why you're collecting this information. What is the context on which this information is collected? And so if you look at our privacy policy on the website, we are very transparent in terms of what information we're collecting and what is the use of that information. And whenever we change that policy, we inform the members about it.
Great. I'm curious. You weren't mandatorily required to be GDPR compliant, right? That's a choice you made.
Yes, it is a choice we made. And also because we were part of Etihad's aviation group. We are a subsidiary of Etihad Aviation Group. And our member base is present worldwide. So tomorrow, if there is a problem, then we will have a situation where the penalties could be severe.
Got it. So, Manish, then I want to pick up the consumer side of data, right? And these are very interesting conversations which happen. So, there is one dialogue which says consumers are going to get more and more careful about what data they share. And then the other end, you have these models in which consumers are freely giving the data. So, your classical cases like a Facebook or these social media channels, they're freely giving a ton of data. So, as a business leader, what's really happening out there? Are consumers really getting very scared about the data that they're sharing and giving? Because you're really seeing two sides of the spectrum. How do you read this?
So, I think not everybody is aware of the value which their data is generating. I mean, I quote a TEDx video which I saw recently. In 2018, Facebook, Google, Amazon and few other companies all put together earned $200 billion revenue based on the data which was generated by us. None of us got paid. What value we got was something free.
Right.
Now, the question is, I think in my view, this equation is going to change. This equation is going to change as awareness increases about what is the value of the data which I am sharing or I'm giving and how do I control that? Do I have a control on this? People should be free to give this data, should be aware that this data is being shared and ready to do that trade-off. Okay, fine, I'm giving this data because I'm getting something in return. So, what is required is to create an economic model around this data sharing. And some work has to happen. I don't think enough has been done. But as awareness increases, you will see these things coming across.
So, when you say an economic model, are you saying a model where consumers are incentivized for the data that they're sharing?
Consumers are given something in return. And if you look at Intermiles, we are offering the value in form of miles, which you get free for sharing that data.
So, can you give me an example?
When you do a transaction with us,
right,
and you give your profile information, etc., we are able to sense for my customer about 2,000 odd different data attributes so that we add value to make you relevant. We save your time and you get rewarded with miles. So, if you apply that lens, these miles are free for you.
Okay. So, is it time, and I'm sure the time has already passed actually, is it time for organizations to start understanding the latent value of these non-transactional data points that they have about their consumers?
Yes, and I think in my view, the next decade is going to be TBD, not to be decided, but technology, business and design.
Okay.
And when I say design, I bring data into it because privacy by design using data is the key element which I think will pan out. You see, a lot of companies are updating their privacy policies and making it a lot more transparent and also preventing use of this data by third-party aggregators. So the challenge is going to be there, but marketers have to solve for this. And the way I look at it is technology, business and design. Design is going to play an important aspect around it and business will drive value and technology makes it available.
So, if I were to ask you to look into a looking glass and say a couple of years down the line, how do you see or envision a loyalty 2.0 or a loyalty 3.0? What would be the fundamental tenets and how would it be possibly different from the way we see loyalty today?
So, I think before I answer, let me give you an example of the previous question which you had asked. Blockchain. Now, imagine a situation where blockchain as a technology is a consent management platform and you store the consent of the customer in a secure way. It could be a public or a private ledger, depending on the use case. And the privacy is not compromised because the user has done an economic evaluation by giving a permission and has got a fair value out of it. So that's one of the ways in which the problem can be solved. And my gut is that blockchain will play an important role in the loyalty space as well, especially when you want to grow beyond and make it much more open.
Okay. So that's on the back end business tech aspect of it. From a consumer lens, how do you see loyalty evolving? What's a 2.0 for a consumer?
For a consumer, it is mostly around having more control, yet at the same time, getting convenience and getting value. The equation will always be centered around value. It has in the past, whether when the frequent flyer program started or a loyalty program started, what is the utility value of that currency or utility value of my association with that brand? And every customer, every member does this trade-off. So it will always be value-driven.
And when you look at value, especially in the context of loyalty and actually in any relationship, there is also the dimension of time. So you've evolved as an industry. I think we've evolved from a place where you had evergreen miles, evergreen points, and then everyone started saying, hey, can I have a shorter time frame? So when you look at one in the spectrum, I do a transaction on Google Pay, I get a 16 rupee cashback credit to my account in 30 seconds. And then at the other end, you have these places where I need to wait out for a couple of years so that I can actually redeem and get the benefit. How do you see that dimension of time playing out? And how do you think it is going to influence the design and operationalization of loyalty programs?
That's an interesting question. And I think we try to solve it by creating miles linked to activity.
Okay.
So as long as the member is active, the miles don't expire. But the moment activity drops off, then you are reminded to use your miles within a certain period of time. And if you're not able to use the miles, then miles expire. Which is fair from the business as well as from a liability management as well as from a customer's point of view. Because I have something which I have been given time to use it. And for us, it's 18 months. So any one activity in the 18-month period will ensure that the miles don't expire. The intermiles keep on remaining live. In an 18-month period, if you have not done a single activity, and which means customers have lost the value proposition or the brand is not attractive or whatever, the customers have moved to a different phase of life where this is not relevant anymore, then they will be given an opportunity to use their miles. Otherwise, the miles will expire.
So I'm going to give you a very simple scenario, right? Let's say there are two consumer propositions there. One which says, hey, Upen, you bought the shirt from me. I will give you $200 now. Take it. Alternatively, you wait out for a year, accumulate your purchases, and maybe you can get $500 in a year down the line. So these are very two distinct sides of the spectrum. So one bunch of guys are saying, hey, give me $200 now. It makes sense for me. I'm cool. I'm not going to wait out for a year. As a brand, how do you cross this bridge? Because consumers are looking at instantaneity, they're looking at spontaneity. Give me stuff which I can touch and feel and consume and experience right now. And don't ask me to wait for 18, 24, 36 months.
So I think if you look at individual brands, then it may be valid. But that's where the power of coalition comes in. If you are doing a transaction in your everyday lifestyle, you're doing a transaction pretty much every single day and you have a co-brand credit card or payment device which is rewarding you. So if you look at the way we have designed a program, if you spend 25 to 30,000 rupees a month, you can very easily achieve your reward in 6 to 8 months. That's the time frame which we have seen. And sometimes when you subscribe to certain product and services, that redemption can happen in the first month or second month itself. So it's not about the time it takes. It's about the value. Now, if you make it instant, then it is as good as a cashback. Where is the value in the currency and what it will drive? But allow the customers to accumulate that currency so that they can go for that experience which they desire. And that's where our zone is. Intermiles is appealing to the experience seekers.
Okay. So, Manish, as a leader, you are working in a format where you need to deal with multiple partners at a strategic long-term basis. Now, the beauty, obviously, is the power of the value proposition can create for a consumer. But the reality is when you're dealing with large brands and multiplicity of partners, there are two things. Every business has a cyclicity to it. There are different variables which impact and influence them. And the other dimension is the people in the teams change. So how do you as Manish, managing a few thousand brands, and you need to be constantly engaging and being in touch with them, but each of these brands is going through its own journey in their life. How do you straddle this and how do you keep all this together?
So the way we have organized ourselves, there is a partnership team which manages this entire relationship angle. And contractually, these relationships are long-term relationships. They are not one-year relationships. They are mostly 5 years, 6 years, 7 years in some cases. The approach has always been where you go across and create a solution. At the end of the day, you're talking to a marketer, you're talking to a product manager on the other side. He's looking for dealing with a set of challenges. And you come up with a solution which will address his particular KPI or whatever the objective has been. And it's imperative to be transparent in that process and earn the trust of the partner. And that's probably has been there. It means spending a lot of time meeting with them, doing a significant review at each milestones, at significant milestones, and being transparent to say, okay, this is working, this is not working, and be nimble and agile to do those experiments which the partner wants. And that's what has been the key. The other challenge which we faced is you can't talk to all the partners at the same time. And therefore, we started creating those platforms. We have a shopping platform, we have a dining platform, we have an insurance platform, we have a hotel platform, where the partners get positioned and content discovery happens. And the next phase is where we are moving into the commerce platform on the travel side, is where we are embedding commerce capability to drive. And therefore, the currency plays an important trigger for choosing a particular partner or a property over the other.
Okay. Manish, at this stage, I'm going to move on to you as a leader and your individual leadership, right? And one of the biggest things required of a leader is in terms of managing, retaining, nurturing, and growing talent. And in this day and age, when you're moving into digital and data, these are very diverse skill sets that one is looking about. So what's been your experience and in your journey of over a decade plus now? And what's your view on talent? What's happening out there? And tips for other leaders who are trying to figure out this conundrum of talent?
Sure. So I'll address both the aspects around it. Unless one tries, they will not know what can work and what cannot. I would advise the younger generation to stay hungry for knowledge and build a focused approach towards experience. Some of the guiding principles which I have looked at is avoid passive-aggressive behavior, listen broadly but don't waffle on decision. When in error, admit, apologize and move forward. And I have stood at one of the offsite and apologized to some of our people and say, this is the mistake I made and therefore let's move ahead. In crisis, you have to lead from front. Important to communicate the intent. And I think what we have learned is that when why is clear, then how becomes easy. So in our town halls, in our meetings, we want to understand very clearly with the why and lay emphasis on why. But having said that, there is also an element around identifying talent that are capable yet nimble to create the learning mindset. We started our journey to become a lot more agile and adopted agile as a culture quite some time back. But what's more important is to find that talent which is a little more proactive, solution oriented, and often ready for some sort of conflict. But then being purpose driven is far more important. So we sat down and created our own matrix to say, what is the purpose of Intermiles? Fulfill aspiration, memorable, rewarding experiences. What the narrative on which the conversation is going to happen? For example, every new recruitment, we do a talent assessment. And I, for key positions, I get to meet the person along with a few others and keep reminding ourselves our purpose. I think there is no said mantra, but I guess the question is, we hire motivated people and try to inspire them. And that's what has been the key for us and also for retaining them.
Okay. You've launched several new products. And of course, now you just shared with us what you're doing in the different verticals across commerce, hotels, travel, right? So all of us obviously see the rosy outcomes. And I'm sure there's been a lot of pain, many things which possibly haven't worked out as well as it would have. Be it a product, service offering or whatever. So any tips, basis your experience, for other leaders and innovators out there about managing failure, managing things not working out?
I think when we started off in 2015, 2016, we had several such failures. At a given point of time, we were running about 70 odd projects and half of them failed.
Wow.
The challenge was our performance management system was not aligned towards this. And that's where we started to, and it is still not. I mean, I won't call it, we have perfected the art. But then what we started off last year and what we are graduating this year to is we are taking an approach to do a lot more quarterly check-ins and quarterly reviews and be more aware of what is to be done in this quarter. Not exactly the full OKR model, but somewhere a hybrid between what the quarterly model would look like. And therefore, that kind of gets everybody aligned. And I lay emphasis on this purely because often enough, unless the alignment is there, there are problems which you will face in the project or in the organization. So in the monthly town halls, be transparent, admit the mistakes and move on. And encourage people to take risks.
So Manish, great words. And I'm going to push you on this one because this is something which I don't think I've ever cracked the answer to. And I'd love your view or take a crack at it.
Sure.
So let's say there are two guys. right? And let's put them in sales because they're clear numeric drivers. So there is one sales guy who's done 130% of his target, right? And you're sitting with him at the end of the year. There's another sales guy who was given a very challenging project of cracking a distribution in Bihar, let's say. And he did multiple things, but his failures actually helped the organization learn stuff, and which they could then use as a blueprint in the other states, right? But at the end of the year, looking at two guys, one guy who's done 60% of his target, another guy who's exceeded by 30%. As a leader, how do you rate these guys in a large formal organization setup?
So on the sales front, numbers will always speak. But the important element is not to penalize the guy who actually didn't achieve his target. How do you reward him is a different conversation around, as to he should not be penalized because he is not able to achieve the target. But he is not getting rewarded either. But the point is the lesson which the organization learned, how do you reward him?
Right.
And that's where the crux lies, to say what are the learnings, how he can share the learnings, the mistakes. All of us have some hindsight, we learn certain things. And that learning can be adapted to people so that we don't repeat those mistakes. Now, in that process, you can give him a target to finish certain things within a certain period of time. And once he does that, he gets some amount of reward. Because at the end of the day, he has a learning and now he's imparting it. And the objective is to share that knowledge. Now, he could very well be not given the reward and he could get demotivated and get out of the company. But so does the learning. Now, how do you create an environment of continuous learning is to encourage such behavior.
Have you seen organizations being able to implement it consistently and well?
Some, yes, but mostly tech companies, I would say.
Okay.
But large organizations, no. I think there is a need to change the performance evaluation, performance management framework. I mean, if I ever change my career, the next option for me would be to look at an HR role. Really, because I see there is a significant amount of work which needs to be done, especially in the performance management and the approach towards performance management.
Got it. Okay. And finally, before we head into our famous rapid fire section, influencing stakeholders, be it partners, customers, consumers, employees. As a leader, influencing is an extremely important, vital part of getting things done. And then you have different behavior types that you need to sort out for, right? And it gets even more challenging when you're bringing in something new, when you're challenging the norm, breaking the mold. Any interesting experiences that you'd like to share? And what's worked for you?
I'll quote, as Buddha said, the more you try to control something, the more it controls you.
Wow.
As a leader, the best approach is to lead the change. Because leading yourself, knowing and growing yourself so that you can effectively lead others and inspire them is the crux of it. I tend to fall in that category. Not everything I know. I mean, how do we develop a product management framework is a challenge which we are seeing. We are transforming ourselves from a loyalty program operator to a consumer tech business. What changes do we need to do? I can very easily appoint somebody and get him to consult and give us the... But then I will not be the wiser. So I took it upon myself to read, understand what it takes, what are the different ways in which one can create. And therefore, leading this change, it's just my KRA. And I have to find a way to finish this entire framework. Secondly, don't be afraid. Just because it may not work out, you don't know. Don't be afraid to fail, as only those who keep trying can finally smell success. So nothing new, but I have always done this in my entire career, whether it was moving to US to set up the US operation, hiring, firing, shutting down operations, moving back, taking the risk and pushing the envelope as much as possible. And more importantly, I think creating a continuous learning environment for driving innovation. And I like to draw this parallel towards the software industry or the product industry, the CI/CD, continuous integration, continuous development. Because the learning cycles are shorter. There's always so much changing that you need to adapt and make changes. How do you do that in an environment where you are, the business is teaching you lessons, the insights are also available, and therefore using a continuous learning methodology and continuous improvement framework, this problem can be solved. And that's why I believe that the approach towards performance management has to change. Gone are the days where you can do the annual appraisals. And I'm championing that. I'm taking it internally.
So I'm guessing you spend a lot of your time on people.
I do. And people is the most important aspect of our business.
And if I may ask you, how much of your time do you spend on people, do you think?
So I could do a lot more. If I look at my calendar, I have almost 3 to 4 hours blocked for one-on-one meetings with people, with either partner or my own teams, or reviews. And I have this religious practice which I do, whereby I look at every week one particular area and get the team to come and present what they have done. And I follow a 3P model. It's not a fancy presentation which I seek. What was the plan? What are the problems? And what is the progress? On these 3Ps, I review what's been done, not just by the individual, but also by the teams.
One thing I respected you for, Manish, you're one of those leaders who's always spent time in the market and with the customer. And I've known you for a very long time now.
Thank you.
And I think we need to see more leaders doing that. Unfortunately, in many organizations that I've seen, I'm not saying all, there's an opportunity for leaders to spend more time in the market with the customers. So what happens, do you think, for many leaders? Is it that they just get sucked into the day-to-day stuff, or what really happens for them?
I think, as I said, I mean, I can comment about myself, but not about others. But my guesstimate would be that the control aspect becomes a lot more dominating in the role. And therefore, how to let go of the control, because the more you control, you get sucked into it.
Yes.
And that's has been my learning. And I guess I'm no different. I mean, I was also something displaying something similar. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. There are several things which I still am working on. And I have, we did a session in Goa last year to come up with an open forum to talk about organizational issues, team norms, individual behaviors. And I have my own list of things which I need to work on. And being aware of it and create an action plan towards it, as I think is required, which I'm sure everybody has his or her areas to improve upon. The question is how often you do it until it becomes a muscle memory.
Got it. Okay. So Manish, you're going to move into a more fun section of the show. It's called the rapid fire, the quick fire. But the beautiful part of this is even if you give very good answers, you will not get a coffee hamper. All right. So this is very cool, light stuff. Just feel chill about it. Be spontaneous. All right. Your first crush.
I can't even remember.
Oh, come on. Or were there so many first crushes?
I can't even remember. When was it? Interesting. I guess in class 9th or 10th, maybe.
Okay. So are you still in touch with her?
No.
No. All right. Okay. That's another podcast. Okay. Best book.
I'm not an avid reader, sure. But Chanakya Chant by Ashwin Sanghi is my favorite.
Okay. All right. Movie?
Black.
Black. Awesome. Favorite drink or cocktail?
Espresso martini, which is a perfect combination of espresso, coffee liqueur, vodka, but no sugar syrup. And in December, I was in a wedding in Bangkok, and interestingly, they cut a red chili and put on top of it. So the taste was just mind-blowing.
You made it sound very yummy. I must try this one. All right. Can you describe in a couple of words the worst person you have ever worked with? Some key words which come to your mind.
I think patronizing, pompous, and deceitful. I think those are the three ways in which I can talk about them.
And as a corollary, someone you really loved working with, how do you describe them?
Easy, open, and spontaneous.
Okay. A couple of words to describe Manish as a leader?
I think, as I said earlier, my guiding principle for a leader is that listen broadly, but don't waffle on decision. Inspire. In crisis, lead from front. Even if you are not present in celebrations, but in crisis, you have to be in the front.
Okay.
And always communicate the intent. Why? Often, we miss out talking about why, and we hide why. And when why becomes clear, how becomes simpler.
Okay. Play safe or go for broke?
Play safe or go for broke? Neither. I think somewhere in between.
No, you have to make a choice. Anyhow, you're not getting the hamper, so go for it.
Okay. Play safe then.
Play safe? Okay. If you were given $1 billion right now.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay. And there are two parts to this question. If you were given $1 billion right now, what would you do with Intermiles?
I think this question is for a separate, calls for a separate discussion.
Give us some peak insights.
Intermiles as a currency and truly digital currency is not just limited to India. It can be across any country. And the concept which I spoke about as Intermiles as the currency which empowers and drives value to members for their data, I think I would go and bet my money on that.
Interesting. And if you're given $1 billion to set up something in any other domain, which area do you think might fascinate you more?
I haven't given a thought, but off the cuff, if I look at it, probably I would look at blockchain.
Blockchain?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that technology has potential. The underlying methods, it needs more work on bringing it live with good use cases. Not necessarily, I'm not saying from a loyalty perspective, it could be anywhere.
Sure.
I mean, I was talking to somebody in IATA. There is a significant efficiency which can be drawn when people book interline tickets when you're traveling from one airline to the other. The revenue accounting process takes almost 21 to 36 days to settle this through the IATA mechanics. But if the blockchain is there, there's no question around going through this process. The settlement can be instant.
Correct. An interesting innovation you've come across recently and which has really excited you and could be in any space.
I think 3D printing, it has the potential to create significant disruption.
Okay.
And the other one is last year, or I think December 2018, the TEDx Gateway here, Gravity Jet Suit. I think that, to me, is the other innovation which can solve a lot of problems, especially in the areas where you have to manage crowd and control and security areas. In a country like India, which is crowded.
I know you have a young daughter, so I thought I'll ask you this. 3 things every student must do today.
Learn how to bounce back.
Okay.
Seek feedback and not judgment. And I think we are culprit ourselves, but more so because there's a race happening. And learn about personal finance. God, that's a subject which can go on.
All right, so the last one on the quickfire, Manish. What would Manish 2.0 be like? So we've seen Rajnikant and Robot. So I thought I'll ask, what is Manish 2.0 like?
Manish as a person is much more evolved, much more learned. And I think maybe without this beard. But a lot more rich experiences to share.
All right, awesome. So Manish, it's been an absolute pleasure catching with you as always. Once again, thank you so much for your time and wish you every success with Intermiles.
Thank you, Abhil, for having me here. Thank you.
Sure, thanks. Awaaz.com